This audio essay accompanies Botanical Colour, The Red Pathway, a project that grew out of a year spent with the work and archive of Margaret and David Redpath. Margaret and David were the last owners of Wallace Woollen Mill in Ambleston in North Pembrokeshire. They taught themselves to weave and over many years became recognised as leading authorities in natural dyeing, developing hundreds of natural dye colours from plants, lichens and insects. This recording is intended to be listened to alongside the accompanying publication. There are four sections. This is the introduction, and the following chapters are Colour, Alchemy and Innovation, and the final chapter is All One, which reflects the worldview that shaped Margaret and David's approach to life and work. If you can, listen somewhere quiet. Put on a pair of headphones, mute phone notifications, and give yourself a little time. Once a chapter has finished, you can select the next chapter, or you can take a break in between. Feel free to flick between the pages and the chapters, where you'll be able to encounter some of the people and places that are shared. I feel as though I should begin by introducing myself. I'm an artist living in Pembrokeshire. For the last 20 years, I've worked across mediums: film, photography, drawing, writing and making. Whatever the medium, the work usually begins with paying attention to places and stories, to the ways people remember things. When I became a parent, my practice changed, not because my interests had altered, but because my days had. The kitchen table became my studio. I learnt to work in short stretches between meals, naps and school runs. Cloth suited that way of working. It asked nothing of me while I was away. It waited, holding its place, until I returned. Textiles became the material I worked with because they already belonged to everyday life. They wrap our bodies, they bear the marks of use, stretched where bodies have rested, worn where hands have returned. Time folded into fibre. My curiosity turned to colour. I gathered plants from the hedgerows. Onion skins were saved. Avocado stones collected on the windowsill. Before long, buckets of fermenting dye stood in the garden. I had spent years exploring landscape through film. Natural dyeing offered another way of looking. Landscape became a source of colour and of knowledge. At the time, I didn't know that one of the world's leading authorities on natural dyeing lived only a few miles from my home. Looking back, I think the project had already begun before I recognised it. It seems to have seeded itself. Margaret Redpath's name appeared in conversation. Then it appeared again. Friends mentioned her, neighbours did too. Finally, the woman who delivered her bread asked whether I'd like Margaret's phone number. It seemed an extraordinary synchronicity. I was teaching myself to make colour from plants when I discovered that someone who had devoted her life to the same work, at a level of mastery I was only just beginning to understand, had been living just down the road. So I arranged to meet her. A few days later, I was driving to her home, Spindles, for a cup of tea. Very quickly, I realised I wasn't simply meeting someone who knew about natural dyes. Margaret and David had spent decades observing, testing, and recording. They had worked things out for themselves. Knowledge had accumulated around their work with extraordinary patience and care. I thought I was setting out to learn how to make colour from plants. Instead, I found myself responsible for a lifetime of knowledge. I left that first visit with a sense that what they had made should be encountered by others. That became this project. Margaret and David bought Wallace Woollen Mill in 1969 and moved to Pembrokeshire with their four children. Almost everybody I've spoken to has described them as a partnership. They ran the mill together, they raised a family together, they worked and developed their research together. I never met David. He died 2 years before I first visited Margaret. Still, over the past year, I've come to know him through the people who knew him and through the archive they've left behind. People describe David as practical and methodical. He solved technical problems, improved machinery, and worked out how things functioned. They also remembered his warmth, his ease with people, the way he made them feel welcome. Margaret's strengths lay elsewhere. She had an instinct for colour and design, developed in the early years at the mill. She was curious, sociable, playful, and seemed to delight in sharing what she knew.
I'm their daughter. I'm one of four children, so I have three brothers. It had been on the market for a couple of years, but Mrs. Morgan had been oiling, or somebody had been oiling the machinery and keeping it all in working order for that time. So he'd learnt how to use the machinery. He was very practical.
We arrived at the mill in the winter of 1968. It was a hard winter that year, and Dad was very excited because he'd bought this woolen mill from the previous owner. The previous weaver had died 3 years early, so his widow was looking after it. And he took this on as a huge project. I mean, everything was sort of caked in dust and wool dust and oil, and you know, it hadn't worked for 3 years. So he pulled a lot of the old machinery out, the spinning mules, and bought in some looms, and started, he and Mum started to build a business.
I often tell people our life started when we moved to Wallace Woolen Mill in 1969. I was born in 59, so I was just on the cusp of 10 when we moved in. It was a very free-spirited place. So many, many happy memories of playing at the mill and in the surrounding area. You know, to start with, it was fringing table mats. Then we got into running the tea shop, then we got into working in retail, and in parallel I got into working on the looms, the weaving, the mechanical piece of it, which I absolutely adored.
Even at the age of three, I was quite fascinated by the natural world and birds in particular. So we arrived, I didn't really know what was going on at that stage, but we anyway went on a boat and we turned up at this place in Pembrokeshire. And it felt like a paradise to me because it was just surrounded by amazing countryside and a stream and the freedom to just wander around. So my childhood memories are really looking for birds' nests and looking at snakes and tickling fish in the stream. For me, it was an idyllic time.
I am Margaret and David's oldest grandchild. My mum, Kate, my dad, Roger, had both worked in the woolen mill at times, and we were lucky enough to grow up just a few miles down the road from Wallace.
They ran the mill for over a decade, growing it to be a considerable scale, with shops in the UK and the United States. In the summer, it became a busy place, drawing visitors as well as trade. By the late 1980s, the mill's industrial life was already in decline, and like many small woolen mills in Wales, it gradually ceased production. Margaret and David turned their attention fully to natural dyeing, finding ways to develop and commercialise their work. They produced more than 160 natural dye recipes for yarn and contributed to a number of significant commissions, including embroidery yarns for the restoration of the Bayeux Tapestry and work connected to Shakespeare's birthplace. They were widely respected within the natural dye community, in the UK and internationally. Margaret had agreed to take part in this project. She was 91. We had planned to spend time together, looking through notebooks and dye samples, talking about the work. Before any of that could happen, she died suddenly. The story I thought I was telling changed. I no longer had Margaret to speak to or ask questions of. Instead, her family entrusted me with the archive she and David had built together. Rather than learning directly from Margaret, I found myself working through notebooks, meticulously recorded dye recipes, research, swatches, and conversations with those who knew them best. They remain present in the materials and in the gaps between them.
their work and their lives were so intimately bound up together that you couldn't really separate them. My grandma had a really good eye for beauty and clothes and just beautiful objects as well. For me, it was just this incredible sensory experience, really. Just the smells of the looms and the dyeing room. And I just remember thinking it was, I always felt like it was sort of like a magician's workshop, especially the dyeing room, because you'd go in and there would be these huge vats bubbling away and these tiny scales with very precise amounts of alum and big hanging skeins of wool and the colours everywhere. And my grandma in these enormous sort of rubber gloves pulling things out of the cauldrons, basically. It was magical.
Mum was inspired by colour, and inspired by colour in the natural world, so she brought in the colour to it.
Marjorie Haynes is a key person. With her husband moved to Pembrokeshire to buy a sheep farm, as you do. Her husband was a banker, I think, in the city or something. It's like a really wild story. And then they started, so that was in the Preseli's. So they had some sheep, and Marjorie was very much into spinning and dyeing and all sorts. And so they had a little group. How those two met, I don't know. But I know that it was Marjorie and Margaret, and then there were a few other people involved. Pam, who used to go there, and they would just meet every week and do spinning, but they did dyeing as well, I know. So they started, I think actually it might have been Marjorie who started Margaret off on the plant dyeing thing.
Marjorie invited Mum to come and visit her, and she gave Mum a really lovely nurturing weekend and just looked after her. But she was a natural dyer, and she introduced Mum to that. And Mum really discovered it. I went along with her on a couple of workshops, and I actually followed it up when I went back to college and started exploring it in my own way. Dad was slower to come on board. Mum was sort of poking him and saying, "Oh, it's amazing, amazing." And he was happy that she was happy, but he saw it as a bit of a hobby. And then they went to a talk in London, I think. No, I won't guess at the name. And somebody talked about natural dyes in the wider picture and showed the colours that you can get. And Dad had this light bulb moment and came on board totally. So then he brought his industrial, his experience of industry to it.
At some point, around about 88, 89, Mum and Dad went to a studio in London. I think it was David Black's studio. And they came back and suddenly, you know, the lights were on again. And it was, oh my God, the future is dying. The future is natural, not dying, sorry. The future is natural dyes, Renaissance dyes, that name came later. And from then, that started their dyeing journey.
In undertaking this project, I thought I would learn a great deal about natural colour. But I came to understand that their work was shaped by something beyond craft. Margaret and David were Quakers. I had not expected to find in this archive a way of living as well as a way of making. It became a lens through which I began to understand their practice and a guiding principle for the project.
One of the key things for them was they were both 9 at the start of World War II, and it had a huge impact on them individually. It wasn't anything they particularly wanted to remember. I mean, we were very lucky as a family. You know, their parents weren't involved in fighting. But my mum still remembered the doodle bugs coming over and listening to see if it would stop, because that would mean that you were in for a hit. My dad went to live with his cousins for part of the war. And that was what directed, that was, directed is maybe the wrong word, and that was what drew them to Quakerism then, because they both became confirmed pacifists and saw value in everybody. So they really lived the Quaker testimonies of peace, equality, truth and simplicity. And they became Quakers just a few years before we arrived. So we grew up very much, they were, whilst they were exploring what it meant. And the Quakerism, I think, provided a sort of support, a supportive model for them. And it was certainly an impact, you know, on our, on life at home.
Over time, the project grew beyond the archive. More than 60 volunteers took part. We worked with schools, planted a community dye garden, made collaborative textiles from cloth dyed with plants gathered in Pembrokeshire, and recorded memories from friends, family and former colleagues. Three ideas kept returning. Colour, alchemy and innovation, and all one. A phrase that reflects the worldview that shaped Margaret and David's approach to work and life. The chapters that follow are built around these ideas. When you're ready, you can continue to the next track, Colour.